Welcome to this episode of the Anti-Woke Podcast. Let's do a jokey preview. Black Little Mermaid just wants to go to the white high school in 1964 Alabama, but Disney turned the water cannons on her and released the attack dogs. I was addicted to fentanyl, but now I'm addicted to AI, and it's even worse. From the river to the sea. Which river? I don't know. Which sea? Beats me. We're replacing all federal judges with AI next year. What should we do in the meantime? Make them all black women. Now on with the rest of the show. Let's do a review of the Marvels, even though I haven't seen it and won't be watching it. I watched a bunch of reviews on YouTube. Alachia Queen, link in the description. This is kind of what she said. She said it's for kids. I don't know if that was on purpose, but that's how it came across. Just only a kid would not question things. And the stars of it are three women, which is Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel, and Monica Rambeau, who in the comics is another Captain Marvel. And everyone likes Ms. Marvel. She's the Pakistani superhero who's young and is a fangirl, and she comes off as likable. No one likes the other two. And the main villain is mad at Captain Marvel because Captain Marvel did something to the villain's planet, and so the villain is now going around and stealing the water, the oceans, the atmosphere, and the sun from various planets that Captain Marvel likes. And that's to save her home planet, which, you know, end result is she has to go against Captain Marvel and the other ladies, and she gets beaten. So I guess she doesn't really save her home planet. She could have gone and found some planets that were not inhabited and taken the ocean and the atmosphere and the sun from them, but she didn't. And maybe you can replace the oceans on a planet that lost its oceans with another ocean. And, you know, maybe the atmospheres are the same, so you can do that. It's kind of like, you know, in the movies, every planet you go to, everyone speaks English. But if your sun goes out, can you just take the fire from the outside of the sun and put it on your sun? Isn't there something about fusion that's on the center of the sun? And are stars all interchangeable? Anyways, to a kid, it would make sense. It's basically just fire, earth, air, and water. But all that is just a backdrop for kind of a sisterhood of the traveling pants, where the three women all learn a life lesson. The young one has to learn that sometimes heroes can't save everyone. Like, there's a planet that's going to get destroyed, I think because they're taking the atmosphere away, and the bad guy wins, and they're like, well, we can't save everyone. If we stay here, we're going to die, so just leave them. Leave them all to die. Which is how, you know, that's how real life is, but when you get to write your movie, usually you make the hero save everyone. Like, I will never back down until the last person is saved. Nope, they're like, nah, psh, they're all toast. And then Captain Marvel has to learn to live with the fact that she's killed a lot of people and forgive herself, and I guess she does. Her friends forgive her, tell her it's not her fault, and she forgives herself. And then Monica Rambeau, she's the black one. That's her story. She's there, she's black. That's way more than enough, bigot. And there's a mid-credit scene that introduces more black superheroes and reminds you of the X-Men. I mean, the movie's such a big flop that everything that they tell you in the movie that's coming up may not come up because of the movie itself. Like, maybe they could have done it if they just hadn't put it in the movie and teased it. But the other thing that they tease is the Young Avengers, which apparently is a comic book. And I guess, I'm a comic book fan. I have paid over $1,000 for a comic book in my life. I mean, basically, I was the hugest Marvel fan ever for 30 years, and now I couldn't hate Marvel more. I don't want them to fix it. The whole thing can just go to hell. But anyways, Young Avengers, it's something from after my time, but so, you know, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they've been taking white characters and making them black, and they've been taking male characters and making them female. And you're like, well, I was like, well, that's it. There's nothing more you can do. They've done it to everyone. That's the end of it. But that's not true. You can take adults and make them children. Oh, and you can make them gay, because you gotta turn the kids gay somehow. That's Disney's motto. So I hope to God they make this Young Avengers movie. It's gonna be hilarious. But basically it has race swapped, gender swapped, what? Young, you know, child versions who are gay of all your favorite superheroes. I mean, not every one of them is race, gender, sexuality, age swapped. You know, some of them are race, age swapped. Some of them are sexuality, gender swapped. You get it. But the Muslim Ms. Marvel is going to be the leader of it, I guess. And people like her. She's the only thing that people like from this movie. So the movie is for kids. It's actually for young girls. It's a Disney princess movie. I think the planet where the villain is trying to steal the water from, they go there to warn the people, and it turns out that Captain Marvel, you know, this is Brie Larson, the blonde one, the main one, the star of the first Captain Marvel, she's married to the prince of the planet, which makes her a princess. And I don't think they have sex. It's a political marriage or something. But she wears a princess dress version of her costume. And on this planet, they speak English. Well, they don't speak it. They can only understand English if you sing it to them. So basically, she's a princess, she wears a princess dress, and she sings, just like a Disney princess cartoon. And then the end of the movie has a Disney cartoon death ending. So a bunch of the Disney cartoons, I think Lion King, Hunchback of Notre Dame, a few other ones. Anyways, you don't have the hero of the story kill the villain at the end. The villain has to kill themselves. Oh, Beauty and the Beast, it happens. Like in Lion King, the bad lion is on the side of a cliff about to fall down, and the good lion is like trying to pull the bad lion up, and the bad lion is like, I'm gonna bite you. You know, this is the time to bite you and attack you. When you're the only one pulling me up off the side of this cliff, anyways, and because they decide to attack at that last moment, then they fall to their own death. And so I guess the villain is killed by falling debris, not Brie Larson, debris. Oh, and there's a tentacle cat that has tentacle kittens. Kittens that shoot tentacles out of their mouths, which grab people, suck them into the cat's mouth, which takes the person to another dimension, and then later on, the cat can spit you out and you're fine. So the three heroes use the cats like super vacuum cleaners to rescue people off of an exploding space station. They hoover up all the humans in the space station, take them down to the Earth, and then let them out of the cats. Which I think if you're an 11-year-old girl, you're like, that part was awesome. Another strange thing is that in the movie Spaceballs from the 80s, the big villain Death Star thing was the Mega Maid, which was a house cleaner the size of a moon that had a vacuum that sucked the air off of a planet. The Disney Marvel movie The Marvels is a flop. It's a bomb. It's possibly a nuclear bomb that's going to blow up all of Disney's woke movie shit. It's everything that anti-woke movie critics against Disney have been hoping for. Its opening weekend is 47 million domestic. That's the lowest number for any MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. The second lowest is The Incredible Hulk, which I think made 55 million in like 2009, which you adjust for inflation, that's like 100 million. And the first Ant-Man made 57 million, again, if you adjust, and that was 10 years ago or more, you adjust for inflation, that one's probably like 90 million. And then 2021's The Eternals, which no one liked and was considered a giant flop. If you go by the number of people who actually sat down in a seat, you know, not worrying about how current ticket prices are like $14 on average today. Well, that one had 5.5 million people on the first weekend. This new Marvels has like 3.3 million. So it didn't make much money. And if you count the number of people who went to see it, it is just cratered. And the day the Marvels opened, the online magazine Jezebel shut down, which you probably never heard of it, but it was kind of the online magazine. It's part of mainstream media that was calling everyone misogynistic if they didn't like the first Captain Marvel. And now they're not even around to call everyone a misogynist for this one. And Jezebel was around for over 20 years, but the anti-Disney, anti-woke thing on YouTube, it basically got started big time with Captain Marvel, the first movie in the whatever, the prequel to this, the Marvels. I don't know. If there's a sequel, does that make the first one a prequel? I don't know. But Captain Marvel made $1.1 billion. It was a ton of money. And there was always a question, because that movie came out in between Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, the two biggest Marvel movies. And so was it just a billion-dollar movie because people loved Captain Marvel and they all wanted women to be the stars of Marvel movies? Or did it make over a billion because it just happened to be in the right spot where any Marvel movie would make a lot of money? And that kind of leaves Black Panther open to that question now, too. And we have our answers. Black Panther 2 came out in the past year, and it did all right. So apparently that movie could stand on its own. And now the Marvels, should be called Captain Marvel 2, came out, and it's a complete flop. And the answer is, people didn't like that one at all. It couldn't stand on its own. And now we know. It's kind of like black men got the right to vote in America before white women. And a black man got to be president before a white woman has. And the demographics were white people did not show up for the Marvels. Hispanics and Asians, in particular Asians, definitely came out for it. And blacks came out for it better than normal. And then gender, 65% men, 35%, well, call them women. Anyways, non-binary, who the hell knows what. Anyways, overwhelmingly, men were the people who watched the Marvels, which is an absolutely beautiful result. Like the stated reason by various Disney Marvel executives for the MCU becoming the M-she-U was, they're like, look, half of the audience for these movies is women, but none of the main characters are women. We need more female characters. We need to cater to the female half of the audience. And the answer is, women do not want to see a female Marvel movie. And again, Captain Marvel made so much money, we didn't know. But now we know. Basically, black people do show up for the Black Panther movies. Other than that, putting in diverse people and different genders and gay people does not bring out people of different genders and diversities and the gays. So the audience was overwhelmingly men, older men, I mean, probably people like me who just haven't quite, people of my demographic, I'm a 50-year-old white man, who just haven't quite gotten pissed off yet. But the other kind of person who showed up for the movie was young women. And it wasn't a ton of them. I mean, the movie's a flop. It made less than 1/3 of the original Captain Marvel. But it might entice Disney to keep making these flops, chasing after the young demographic. They're like, these old white men are gonna die eventually. We need to, get the next generation on board. And so the two biggest flops in MCU history now are The Marvels and The Eternals, both which was a black female director and black Asian director, female. And a few years ago, Kevin Feige, he's the head of Marvel. I talked about how it was him and another guy who was a Trump supporter, and they fired the Trump supporter guy because they couldn't get along. And then Kevin Feige's been in charge of the ship entirely ever since, and that's also coincides with all the Marvel movies going to shit, box office-wise. But Kevin Feige, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, he was talking about how he was only hiring writers and directors who were not comic book fans. And when I heard that, I was like, that's weird. But now I have a new theory. Do you know the age and race of writers and directors who are comic book fans? it's going to be white men in their 40s and 50s. And so it's that thing when you want to discriminate against white men, you know, say you have an internship you want to open up, but you say, we're looking for blacks, Hispanics, Asians, people of color, Native Americans, women, non-binary. Anyways, you can do a list of 50 things that isn't a straight white male, or you can just say no straight white males. Anyways, it sounds better to say the 50 things instead of just coming out and saying what you mean. But I think when he said, we're not having comic book fans, or people know anything, have a goddamn clue about comic books making our movies, what he really meant was, we just don't want any straight white males. And like Joe Biden is picking black women to be federal judges 25 times more than you would think he would. I mean, at least probably something like 200 times more than they would if you went by merit. Well, a bunch of terrible federal judges, you can't tell the difference. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a lifetime appointment. But anyways, with movies, it's different. And the answer is, when you don't go by merit with making movies, you get flops, and you can see the results. You know, it takes 2 or 3 years, and you can see the results. But so I said last week, Kevin Feige, kind of sounds like Faggy. It's my theory, is that he thinks he's a civil rights hero. He's like, all these black directors and writers and female directors and writers, they're just as good as white men, but Hollywood is racist and sexist, and they just haven't been given a chance. And so I'll give them a chance, and everyone will see how amazing they are. Well, that blew up in his face. But it's also a little bit of a wake-up call to him. And stuff for the movies and Disney Plus Marvel TV shows that are coming up, things have been changing with them a bunch. The ones that haven't come out yet. So about a month ago, we heard that the Daredevil TV show, like, they'd made 8 out of the 16 episodes, and Kevin Feige looked at those 8 and he said, that's terrible, so they're redoing the whole show from scratch, which you don't normally do when you got that much in the can. And then 2024 was supposed to be maybe 3 Marvel movies, four Marvel movies. Anyways, now it's down to just Deadpool 3, which is the non-Marvel movie, MCU movie. It's part of Fox that got bought by Disney. It's basically an X-Men movie, and the people who work on those are not part of the Kevin Feige diversity, equity, inclusion thing. And then all the diverse, equitable, and inclusive movies that Marvel was going to come out in 2024, they've been pushed off to 2025. Well, one of them that's already been made, which is Captain America 4, a.k.a. Black Captain America. Well, they've decided to do 4 months of reshoots on that movie. And I think movies normally take 6 months. Basically, they did their 6 months of filming it. They finished the whole thing. Now they're doing 4 months of reshoots, which is basically a whole, you know. Anyways, they're very, very afraid that the movie-going audience is not going to take to a Black Captain America. And like, the Black Little Mermaid one should have made in the low $1 billion range, and it made in the low $500 million range. Well, you can see how they'd be afraid now after the super female Marvel movie crashed and burned way harder than the Black Little Mermaid. And basically, when you're trying to be a civil rights hero, putting out a Black Captain America movie that crashes and burns harder than possibly anything ever, you're not the civil rights hero you wanted to be. You're not the MLK of movies. You're not even the Malcolm X of movies. You're looking like the George Wallace of movies, if you know that guy. You're releasing the dogs on the cute little black kids who just want to integrate the high school in the South. And so Captain America 4 is being pushed off to 2025. The other part of Captain America 4 is the Red Hulk, who's real popular from the comics. It's like an evil, smart Hulk who's red. And when the Red Hulk is a human, they're Thunderbolt Ross, another classic comic character, which doesn't matter, except for they were making a movie called The Thunderbolts. Like, basically, they're trying to figure something out to replace the Avengers, which was so popular. So there's talk about bringing back all the original, you know, white male people who died in Endgame to do the Avengers, just like another Avengers movie, like the ones you always used to love. And if they do that, then that is a admission of failure of diversity and equity. And it's not even clear that that's going to bring back the audience. But before they were rethinking everything, what they were doing was they were doing the Thunderbolts, which was a team. It was a Marvel team, very diverse, lots of women, people of color. And so the Thunderbolts movie with their diverse female team, that's in jeopardy. And then Young Avengers, where it's diverse, it's female, it's gay, and it's young, it's kids. That's probably in jeopardy. But that was going to be the other team to replace them. And then they're making Fantastic Four. They're bringing that over. Except, like, out of the Fantastic Four, there's four superheroes. The one that no one likes, or, you know, people like her just fine, but is just way less famous than the rest of them, is the girl. And they're making her the star of the Fantastic Four movie. It's going to be all about the girl. And all the guys that are the characters that people love, they're the sidekicks. And the Marvels was a phenomenally expensive movie. Same thing with the Black Little Mermaid. Same thing with the brown Snow White that's coming up. Marvel, or Disney, is just dumping tons and tons of money into all these movies, which, you know, they wouldn't be that big of a flop. But now all of a sudden you're losing hundreds of millions of dollars because they're so expensive. And so Disney threw away $500 million of extra money for Black Little Mermaid. Disney Plus is losing $500 million, roughly, every quarter. Captain Marvel is, you know, should have made $500 million more than it's about to make. The question is, how far can Kevin Feige, he's Marvel, Bob Iger, he's the head of Disney, he was thinking about running for president as a Democrat, super woke, everyone's super woke, how long can they double down? I mean, I don't think they can ever admit that they were wrong. I mean, it's one thing to create a bunch of flops and take your golden parachute and go off and be rich. It's another thing to be in charge when all the black people go back to white. I mean, it's that thing from 2020 where people will do anything if they could just avoid getting called racist. And I think in America in general, the power of false racism accusations is going down. But I think in Hollywood, that's still strong. But this is a fun week. This is basically the pinnacle of anti-woke, anti-Disney media criticism across the internet. Like, this is it, this weekend. And I did a Spotify poll, and I don't have the results in front of me, but I think I asked, you know, which Disney movie is the biggest crash and burn, and people chose The Marvels, one vote, Brown Snow White that hasn't come out yet, one vote. People did not choose Black Little Mermaid, and I forget what else I put on there. Which reminds me, so Black Little Mermaid actually did well domestically. It was overseas where it didn't get that extra $500 million it was supposed to. Everyone's racist, those Asians, those Chinese, they're all racist. But the Marvels, it made the split, the domestic overseas split was pretty good for overseas. I mean, they're teeny. Like, people overseas, it's a giant flop also in comparison to other Marvel movies. But it's more than half of the money made overseas, which is how Marvel movies are supposed to be. So whatever that means. But I would say this is a big shot across the bow, about as big as the Bud Light boycott. If the mainstream media doesn't say it, then it didn't happen. And Forbes and Bloomberg and all the trades like Variety and Deadline, they're all criticizing Disney. The floodgates seem to be opening. Oh, and then Rotten Tomatoes, that's the website where they put a number on how good a movie is based on critics. Well, when the anti-woke thing, it started with Captain Marvel back in, I guess, 2019. And the audience was criticizing the movie, downvoting it. And Rotten Tomatoes changed their algorithm because that's racist. And then for this movie, the critics had it in at about 55%, which is a rotten score. Anything below a 60% is rotten. And then somehow, they got it up to 61. They got it up to 61% fresh. So there's going to be speculation on whether or not Rotten Tomatoes is cooking the books. And top critics, I think, have it at 40%, which is people who actually have a job being movie critics. there was a kind of like the Oscars too white. People are like, Rotten Tomatoes critics too white. And so they brought in all the non-binary and people of color who aren't famous and don't actually make any money off of it, but you know, but they are non-binary or they are people of color and they're on the internet. And so it was that kind of people that they were able to get it up to 61%. The real critics gave it a 40. Let's talk about hot women. Women whose race or ethnicity makes me run to my keyboard to do a Google image search to find more women like them. So Trump's civil trial in New York is continuing. Trump actually testified this week, but they don't allow cameras in the courtroom, so all there was some, you know, courtroom drawing things. Trump doesn't like the judge and the, I can't remember the term, but it's like the judge's assistant. Apparently the judge has an assistant. This is not the prosecutor. It's not the stenographer. It's someone else. And I think the judge put a gag order on Trump to stop talking about the judge's assistant or something. Apparently the news was that Trump was speechifying and the judge was telling him not to speechify. And I think some of Trump's kids have had to testify. I think Ivanka was there. I saw some video of her like walking towards the courthouse. She walks like she's on a runway. She's crazy tall and just has a forward motion. You can't stop her. Big strides. Interesting way of walking. She looks fabulous. But in fact, not hot enough to make me run to my keyboard. Well, in fact, that phase, I went through a phase of that, but that was like 8 years ago. But Trump has a female lawyer, and she is smoking. And somehow the court case, like, it started off with Trump being guilty before you even knew that there was a case happening. And then the long, drawn-out case with the witnesses and blah, blah is, I think, just to find the damages. You know, what are they going to do to him? So basically, this lawyer lady, her job is to just kind of do speeches at the end of each day. She stands up in front of a podium, talks to the reporters, and talks about the whole thing as, you know, a political witch hunt. But Trump is known for choosing people based on their looks. He does it to men, too. I think maybe he picked his Secretary of State and maybe some generals. He's like, they're tall and good-looking. What's it called? Straight out of Central Casting is a phrase you used to hear from, I don't know, the 40s. But he chooses women based on looks too. I can't remember her name. There was a pretty young woman, maybe she's about, you know, she's around the age of 30, and she was like Trump's assistant for, I think, maybe the first 2 or 3 years of his presidency until she got too famous. And then, you know, the mainstream media started attacking her, and I think she quit. But she was flying under the radar there for a while, and she was smoking also. And anyway, you know, I don't know what her resume could have been. It wasn't justified to choose a, I don't know, 29-year-old smoking hot woman to be the right-hand man of a president. Makes me think, Johnny Depp, in his court case against his ex-wife, he had a forensic psychologist who came in there to say that his ex-wife was crazy. And that psychologist was crazy hot. I mean, you know, you got to be worth, I don't know what, 8-9 figures to randomly just end up with the hottest, with a supermodel looking psychologist. But anyway, Trump's lawyer is hot. And so I went to Google, I just typed in Trump lawyer. And you know, Trump's had many lawyers. But anyways, Google knew exactly what I was talking about. Boom, bunch of pictures of this lady, you know, at her podium talking to the press. And her name is Alina Haba. So, okay, Google, tell me more about Alina Haba. And why is she so hot? And what is that interesting look that she has? And Google is like, oh, she's Chaldean. I'm like, what the hell is that? I mean, you know, like, there's a black country called Chad. Did you mean Chadian? And Google said, don't be stupid. Not Chadian, Chaldean. It's the type of Christian that lived in Syria. So over in the Middle East, it goes Israel, and on top of that is Lebanon, and then on top of that is Syria. And Lebanon is famous for having its own kind of Christians. They used to run Lebanon, and it was like a beautiful, wonderful country. I'm sure when they created Israel initially, they're like, and next door to us is Lebanon, which has Beirut, the Paris of the Middle East, and everything is wonderful. And then, I don't know, but something similar was going on up in Syria. They have the Chaldean kind of Christians. They're some sort of Catholic. I mean, you know, Christians did come from, you know, Jerusalem or whatever. Where, Bethlehem? I think that must be over in the Middle East. I mean, now most of those countries are Muslim shitholes that are trying to get over their third civil war. But there was Jews and Christians mixed up in all those countries. I think the Jews all had to get out. They all had to get the heck out of their countries and move over to Israel. And I don't know what happened to the Christians. Some of them, I guess, moved to America and are working as lawyers for Donald Trump. But I heard someone say something the other day, and it makes total sense. Never heard anyone say it before, but they said West Asian. So there's East Asian. Everyone knows that. That's Chinese, Japanese, not dirty knees, Korean. And then you got South Asian. That's people from India, but you can't call them Indians because that all got confused because we called the Native American Indians, so we need another term. Dot on the forehead Indian doesn't work anymore. And I've heard Southeast Asian, which is, you know, kind of like Thailand heading on down towards the Polynesian type people with all their islands. And I haven't heard anyone say North Asian yet, although I don't know if that'd be like Russian or Azerbaijani. But anyways, West Asian. There's people, you know, what kind of person is that? Oh, that's a West Asian type. But so the Persians in Iran, they're West Asian, and it's kind of everyone to the west of them, which, you know, gives you certain Jews, like the old school Christians, like I'm mentioning. Some of the Muslims too. I don't know a breakdown on all the different types of Muslims. I'm sure there's probably 30 of them. But the West Asian women, they got a certain flavor. And apparently I've got a fever for the flavor. And they're not white, but they're not Indian. They're something in between. And as you go to the east, they look a little more like Indian. And as you go to the west, they look a little more like European. And I kid with this stuff. Or how about let's blame Google. When I hear about a new group of people who have a certain kind of DNA, I go to Google and I type in that name plus the word girl. And thankfully, Google, it doesn't give you little kids, doesn't give you little girls. It gives you women, and it just, I don't know, I guess I could type in the word man, but just girl works. Girl works just fine, and if you're going to type in the word girl or boy or man or woman, try Google. Girl just works the best. It's Google's fault. I will say, I typed in a couple of black African countries, and there Google's like giving me little kids. So for some reason, the internet is like, you know, if you search for Syrian girl or Lebanese girl, it's like, oh, you know, here's smoking hot 25-year-olds. But you search for Ethiopian girl, they're like, you don't want to see those. You know, here's some 8-year-olds. Just something I noticed. But I'm not inventing the wheel. Just keep an eye out for the term West Asian. You might hear it from me. See if anyone else says it. Maybe I'll go do a Google image search for North Asian girl, see what that returns. So this West Asian women being hot thing, it all started because the women in the IDF are hot. That's the Israeli Defense Force, it's the Israeli Army, and Navy, and Air Force all rolled into one. But the IDF girls are hot, and I was trying to think, like, is there any other army in the world that is known for having attractive women? I thought of another one, the Kurds. And they're Muslims, but they're like a special cut above kind of Muslim that allows women in the army. And all this makes me want to double check like the Korean army or maybe the Brazilian army or maybe Norway or Finland. But the U.S. Army has women, but it's not known for having hot women. Anyways, so I was researching it. And people on the internet talk about the IDF girls. And I saw one theory was that It's not real IDF girls. They take Russian and Ukrainian models and put them in the uniforms and then put them on TikTok to, I don't know, make Israel more popular. And I don't know if there's any truth to that, maybe some, but it's not exactly right because since this Israel-Hamas war, they've been showing pictures of the IDF soldiers who have been killed, KIA. And I think it's the Times of Israel has an article where they show pictures of a whole bunch of Israelis who are KIA and, you know, most of it's men, but there's a few just absolutely smoking hot women on there, you know, rest in peace. And I was telling my buddy, like, you know, just a few of those pictures, you know, where it shows maybe 30 soldiers, out of that 30 soldiers, there's more attractive female soldiers on there than I've ever seen of whoever the most attractive female soldier ever in the U.S. Army is. So anyway, it's not just Russian models pretending to be soldiers and then KIA. And then this is a fun thing for me to research, but you know, I'm not just telling you because of that. This is a thing that the world knows, you know, that the internet talks about. Maybe it's part of a psyop to make people support Israel and then Israel can do what they want to the Palestinians. I mean, fill in whatever conspiracy theory you want, but anyways, it's a thing. It's a thing. And part of the thing is that the female IDF soldiers have amazing rear ends. And that took me down a rabbit hole on Quora.com about dress uniform versus fatigues. And basically, it's the female IDF dress uniform that just has these form-fitting tight pants. And someone on Quora said they're not supposed to modify their pants, but they get them modified. I don't know if that's true. Or if you just say, you know, size 28. I guess it'd be metric, whatever that is. And so the IDF girls, they also wear fatigues, and then it just, you know, looks like it's just the normal stuff you wear when you're, you know, crawling through the mud or whatever. Baggy, loose fitting, not form fitting. And then someone on Quora was getting riled up. I don't know if they were, I couldn't tell if they were pro-Israel or anti-Israel. They were one of those things, a bunch. And so they were showing pictures of the dress uniform for different armies all around the world. Like, if you've seen A Few Good Men with Tom Cruise, where he's in the Navy, and there he wears the Navy dress uniform a lot. It's not made for combat. Who knows? Probably the British Army invented this dress and fatigue thing 200 years ago, and then every other army copied them. But basically, every country seems to have the two types. And I think it was Spain. They were showing some pictures of the dress uniform for Spain, and it was men, and they looked like they were male strippers. Like pants and a t-shirt that showed off the chest hair and looked like the stuff was made out of spandex, like a superhero costume. So I learned a bit about uniforms. It makes me think, I think there was like a poll of historians for the best looking military uniform ever. And it was one of the Nazi SS uniforms that is considered the best. I forget what it's called, but it's the one they always have in the movies. Like Inglourious Basterds has a bunch of them. So it's not just a normal Nazi uniform. It's not even a normal Nazi SS uniform. It's like a certain level of officer, Nazi SS. And I can't remember who came in second, but it was an ally uniform from World War II. Some IDF facts. 1/3 of Israeli college students are in the IDF. So it's not a full-time thing. You can go to college and then probably on the weekends go do your IDF thing. And colleges in Israel have pushed the opening of the next term into December. Let's talk Israel versus Hamas. The war is ongoing. I mean, this is not a play-by-play of the war kind of podcast. I think Israel is happy with how it's going so far. You know, will that last? Who knows? Currently, 45 American soldiers have been wounded, sometimes just minor wounds, in Syria and Iraq. And we've been bombing and droning stuff over there. The Hezbollah stuff has slowed down a bit to the north. Basically, the question is, are other countries going to be drawn in? And so far, the answer is no. So the part that I've been wondering about, and we're finally getting some answers, is the West Bank. The other part of
Italy?
Israel, that has a bunch of Palestinians. And I think last week there was maybe 150 Palestinians dead. But what did that mean? Well, it's Palestinians who are being killed by the army. It's not the settlers. There's civilians who are settlers who are trying to go build towns and take land in the West Bank. It's not them doing it much. And it's not rioters. It doesn't look like. Basically, in the West Bank, both civilian sides like to go and riot and maybe burn down people's houses while they're doing it. And I was listening to someone, and they said in the past, the Israelis in the West Bank were afraid of the Palestinians. But now the Palestinians are afraid of the Israelis. Basically, it was like, who could get together a bigger riot and go burn down whose house and back it up with some guns? And I wish I knew when it changed on who was afraid of who, but I'm going to guess maybe 20 years ago. You know, for most of Israel's history, Jews in the West Bank were afraid of the Palestinians. But now it's the other way around. And maybe it's just, you know, the last 5-10 years that it switched. I don't know. But the Palestinians that are being killed, they had some video of it. They're just like army guys. They got, you know, they cover their faces, unlike other army guys. But otherwise, they're just militants with machine guns. And then the IDF is going in there with their own machine guns and probably tanks and stuff and shooting them. It's not like Gaza, where a bunch of civilian collateral damage is happening. I think what happens is the Israelis go in at night to arrest the people who they think are terrorists, and the people who they think are terrorists are like, we're awake and we got machine guns, and they all get it on. And I think what's kind of interesting is maybe earlier on, at the beginning of this war, or certainly just in general, like I said, both sides would riot. But now, if all you were going to do is riot, you're staying home. Like, if there had been a little mini civil war with machine guns in the middle of the Black Lives Matter riots, those rioters wouldn't have rioted. They would have stayed home. January 6th, too. The Palestinians, they like to use slings, David versus Goliath, a little pouch at the end of some string, and you swirl it around and throw a rock. Anyways, don't bring a sling to a gunfight or a knife. And if there's tanks, you may not want to even bring a gun to a gunfight. But the West Bank is probably going to look a little different after all this stuff and, 6 months from now. But we'll have to wait and see. And in Gaza, they're doing these humanitarian pauses, which is not a ceasefire. Don't call it that. And Israel's like, we're not going to do that. And America's like, you got to do that. And eventually Israel's like, fine, we'll do it. I think Israel wanted to do it anyways. They just don't want to appear soft. Because basically it means a bunch of civilians, tons of civilians, are leaving the northern part, which just allows them to shoot people on sight more. Eventually it's going to be like, okay, anyone who is left, you're Hamas. We're just going to say you're Hamas. And if you're in a wheelchair, we don't believe you. And they'll probably be right. That's not a bag in their lap. And so Hamas has all these tunnels. What are you going to do? You can't defeat the tunnels. Well, Israel is not going down into the tunnels. The assumption is that they're booby-trapped to the gills. And so when they find a tunnel entrance, they just blow it up. And that doesn't kill anyone in the tunnels. But if you blow up every entrance, eventually the people down there are trapped in the tunnels. That would be terrifying. The entrances are all camouflaged, I imagine, but maybe you don't need to find them all. If you're like, well, we blew up that building and now it's 3 feet of concrete rubble. If that's on top of a tunnel entrance, you probably can't get out through that very good. There's a question about filling the tunnels with water. In that area, it'd have to be seawater. You could pump tons of seawater into the tunnels. But anyways, that seawater would then go into the groundwater and ruin the wells. So basically, no one could live in Gaza ever again because there'd be no drinking water. So they can't do that. And then Sivdiv on YouTube, he's the U.S. Army guy who was stationed in tunnels in Syria, I think. He had two ideas. You need those, you know, those robot dogs, you may have seen them, with machine guns attached to them. Maybe that would work, he thought. But we have to wait until the AI for the little robot dogs is better, because radio waves, remote control doesn't go through the rock, and putting it on a wire isn't going to work good either, around corners and whatever. Over obstacles, you know, they're going to pile up a bunch of sandbags. Now what does your robot dog do? And then one I hadn't heard was, he said, sarin gas. And I think chemical warfare is not generally considered legal or kosher. But I think, you know, I'm sure they can find a gas that's heavier than air, or maybe they all are, nerve gas or something. And if you can't put seawater in there, you could start filling the tunnels with nerve gas. If anyone has the balls to do that, it would be Israel. And then deny, deny, deny. And I've been having some questions about rape when the Hamas guys got out of Gaza on that 10-7. You occasionally hear that they were raping the Jews, but you really don't hear much about it. And the Times of Israel, their reporter did a write-up on the situation, and then they talked about it on their podcast, the Daily Briefing, Times of Israel. And basically, they didn't answer any questions, but now I know what we don't know, which is they did not talk to any survivors on whether or not they were raped. So that, I think it might, maybe it's a cultural thing. Anyways, that's, I don't know, maybe, you know, like the terrorists would win if you talked about how many people they raped, probably little kids, you know, whatever you can imagine. I think they did stuff that's worse than that. But if the person lived, they're not talking about it. And, you know, the hostages, I think we're not going to hear about it from them too. And it seems like that's, we don't know, but it seems like that's a rule coming from up high. Don't talk about it. Like, it seems to me, if you want to get people on your side, you would talk about the most worst thing that Hamas ever did. And then when there's protests in America with, you know, two sides, be like, you're on the side of doing that one thing to that seven-year-old. And then, you know, what are they going to say? Anyways, that's not happening. I guess that's too far. They don't want to, if they have to do that to win, then they don't want to win. The PSYOP information war. And then the bodies, you could do forensic stuff to prove what happened to the people who, you know, before they got killed or after. But there was so many bodies that all that they did, the forensic, I forget what it's called, you know, people that work at a morgue. Anyways, they just spent their time on identifying people. And then there was one organization or outfit that normally would look at, you know, would be doing rape kits and stuff that like that on dead bodies. That's what they do, I guess, for crimes. But they were given just like the fragments of bones and stuff that where you couldn't even tell who it was. So anyway, they didn't do it either. So no one did it. And after 1 week, you can't tell, can't prove anything. So I don't know if that was an oversight. You know, they were just overwhelmed. No one thought of it. Or maybe it's part of this cultural thing where you don't talk about it. And apparently captured Hamas soldiers have said their orders were go out and kill and also rape as much as possible. In the Times of Israel, I think, you know, they talked to people who went and found the bodies and saw terrible stuff that showed, you know, they're like, oh, they all got raped or whatever. But it's going to be a thing where, like, there's no proof. And then, you know, people on one side are going to say, we don't believe you. It's just pro-Israeli propaganda. Here's a clip from the Times of Israel podcast. You might want to skip ahead if you don't want to hear something gross.
One of the Zaka workers told me that he found a body 3 days after after her murder, and she was face down on a bed, naked from the waist down, bloody. And when they turned her body over to collect it, they saw that she was gripping a grenade that had its pin removed. So her hands had actually frozen around the grenade to prevent the fuse from igniting. And so they ended up having to call a bomb squad. But what he described was a woman who had a bullet in the back of her head, who had signs of sexual abuse, who was gripping a grenade. These were the kinds of testimonies and scenes that we encountered throughout this investigation.
And there's a big psyop aspect to this war. And what matters is how do Americans feel about it? And so what you want, whatever side you're on, you want the other side to do something terrible. You might think you want your enemies to be nice, but no, you want them to be mean. That way you can, you know, it gives you power. So the first thing that happened was some landlord had a couple Palestinian, had a mom and a son, Palestinians living in a house or something, and he killed the son with a knife. He went crazy over the war, and I don't think he was a Jew. I don't know. So that didn't make the Israel side look good. And then recently there was a protest and counter-protesters in California where one of the Palestinian guys bonked one of the Israel guys over the head with a bullhorn, and that guy fell over, hit his head on the concrete, and died. And it seems like that one is getting more media coverage than the stabbing one. And there was a female rabbi in her 40s who got murdered, and the cops have not been talking about it very much. I think they caught the suspect yesterday. I'm talking on Friday right now. But they're not saying who it is, and so probably means it's either a black person or someone on the Palestinian side. Some sort of left-wing pet whose group must be protected, so you can't talk about bad things that individuals do. Or maybe not. We'll see on that one. And I was watching Noam Chomsky on YouTube. He was talking about Israel in general. And he's a famous super far left Harvard professor. But he's not the new kind of woke left. He's, you know, from the 70s or 60s. So he kind of broke down the history of Israel. And it was interesting. I mean, at one point he calls the Israel Nazis. So you can see his perspective. I'm just going to hit some of his highlights. I imagine some of what he says is still true. So he said that America was not actually great friends with Israel back in the day. So Israel was created in 48, and Israel was friends with Britain. And then 48 is the big war, 67 is the other big war. 67 is when America became friends with Israel. And American Jews, they hadn't been talking about the Holocaust a bunch. They hadn't been opening Holocaust museums and memorials and stuff like that before 67. But that was when America and American Jews and Israel and talking about the Holocaust with museums all got going. The ball got rolling. And after World War II, there was secular Arab nationalists. And then there was religious Islamists. And it was like, you know, what kind of government? Who's going to take over each of these former Ottoman Empire countries, you know, Iraq, etc.? And I mentioned how Iran, they had an election. It was all democratic. But the guy wanted to nationalize the oil companies and take it away, kind of go communist and take the oil away from Britain. And America did a coup in there, and then eventually that coup led to crazy Islamists taking over Iran. And so apparently we did that a bunch. All around the Middle East, we said crazy Muslims controlling these countries is better than something that might turn communist. And so non-religious people who might be commies, we're going to take over the Middle East, but America said we'd rather have the religious crazy Muslims, and so that's why it's all religious crazy Muslims controlling the Middle East, at least according to Noam Chomsky. And like I say, that does match up with what happened in Iran, and I don't know what happened everywhere else. And then 67, that was when Israel took over the West Bank, and I've heard other people say this. Israel had a choice. They could either have peace or they could have more land. In 67, that was when they got to decide, and they said, we want more land. Like, they could have given the West Bank completely over to the Palestinians, and maybe everything would be peaceful since then. But that's not what happened. And finally, he noted that in basically every country around the world, the younger generation is more to the left than the older people, except Israel. Israel is the very rare, almost only country in the world where the young people are going to the right. Remember that transgender school shooter from March in Nashville? Born a woman, identifies as a man. Well, they wrote a manifesto and 3 pages of it got released onto the internet the other day. And it basically said they did it because the kids were white. It had cussing in it, little white dicks or something, and their white privileges. And so we don't know for sure, but it looks like the manifesto was withheld from the public because it was a racist against whites school shooting. I believe they killed 6, maybe 3 or 4 kids, 2 or 3 adults. I mean, the media was covering up the fact that the shooter was transgender. That's not good for the narrative. And then I think mainstream media is not mentioning the white thing whatsoever now. It's not a big story. It's a thing to be covered up, obviously. Apparently, the shooter had multiple binders of crazy writings, basically. And they were writing stuff, like, right up until the hour before they went in. Like, I'm about to go in. I hope I have a high body count. And then there's a few things we don't know yet. So the pages were leaked. It sounds like possibly the Biden Department of Justice was the one who said, don't let this manifesto out. Ben Shapiro has a podcast where he lists all the other mass shootings with manifestos that have happened recently. And like every one of those, the manifesto is released because it fit the narrative. You know, like there's a mass shooter maybe killed some black people because they're black. That guy who killed Muslims because they're Muslim. Christchurch, that was years ago. I think some people are using the excuse, oh, we never release manifestos from mass shooters. And it's like, you did it every other time. Seems like only when it's against white people. And then Steven Crowder, he's a right-wing internet influencer. He put out the 3 pages, but then 7 police officers have been put on paid or unpaid leave over the incident. That's all we know on that one. And somehow 100 families were asked, maybe the 100 families that had kids in the school, whether or not they wanted to have the manifesto released. 2/3 of them said no. 1/3 said yes. Again, normally the families are not asked when manifestos are released. I think the Nashville cops said they were going to release the manifesto initially, and then they didn't. You know, something made them think better of it. And basically, the whole thing has been downplayed, but it was kind of fun initially. Like, everyone was calling calling her she, and then they were calling her he. They had to do like retractions on the shooting. I mean, and then shut the hell up about that shooting. I guess here's the thing. There's more mass shootings against whites because they're white than the public is aware of. You know, sometimes like black, wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt saying fuck crackers and he shot people in the back of the head. So anyways, what America needs is one anti-white mass shooting to become publicized for its anti-whiteness. And then when the next one comes around, it's like, oh, that fits the narrative. We know how to tell the story. And they'll just tell the story and then people will be aware that those things exist. But this one is on lockdown. This one is not going to be the one that opens any sort of floodgates. Although with the 7 cops being suspended, if they start firing them, maybe put them, you know, that, I don't know what kind of court case that would go to, could keep it into the news longer. I did a Google News search for it. Like, right-wing media outlets are talking about it, and, you know, like maybe CNN did an article. You know, you search the page for the word white, it's not in there. Same with New York Times. New York Times didn't say that a shooter killed people because they're white, kids because they're white, so it didn't happen. And somewhat related, Heather McDonald was on the Cut the Bull podcast, and she was talking about how the Biden administration was appointing black female lawyers to be federal judges, and she gave some stats. So the Biden administration has nominated 24% of their nominations are black females. And of all the lawyers in America, black females are 2%. So 2% becomes 24%. You know, maybe black female lawyers are just 12 times as good as other types of lawyers. That's what those numbers would indicate if, you know, it was a meritocracy and you're choosing people who are the best person for the job and you came up with that ratio. But obviously, black females are not 12 times as likely to be super good at their job. So what kind of numbers do we have to try and figure out how good black females are at their job? Well, half of all black law school students are in the bottom 10% of their law school. So basically, half of black law school students are at the bottom of their class. So, you know, hopefully Biden's choosing the top half of the black students, which would mean 24% are coming from that 1% of the black female lawyers who are not at the absolute bottom. So they're being picked 24 times as much as you would expect. Or in fact, 24 times as much as they would if you were going on merit. And in fact, that's just if you're totally naive and you don't know anything else. So they're being picked 24 times more than they should, at least. It's probably something like 100 or 200, possibly 230. I just choose 230 because that's how many more times a black person is likely to attack an Asian person violently than an Asian person is to attack a black person violently. And if 230 is accurate, which I think it's probably close, that would mean 229 of those people chosen to be lifetime judges in the federal judiciary shouldn't have gotten picked. 229 out of 230. And I don't know. It could be that being at the bottom of your law school class doesn't mean that you're not going to be a good lawyer. I mean, obviously black lawyers are very good at getting picked for judgeships. Well, actually, that's a joke. Here's a reason why they would be picked more than you would think. I think judges are frequently picked out of being district attorneys, basically lawyers who go and work for the government. And I bet that black lawyers are more likely to work for the government, although that just goes right back to they got chosen because they're black. A lot of jobs, you can't tell how good someone is. Like, Disney's been picking writers and directors and actors based on their race, and then the movies have been having poor box office performance, so you can compare stuff. But filling America with bad judges who make bad judgments that are against what the law says, I don't think there's any way to tell how much of that is going on. Or if there is a way, you come back with a result, they're like, that result is disproportionate, that's racist. Well, an AI looks like it's going to be good at being a judge, so all those jobs are going to go away anyways. There we go. Disney, you know, making movies, being a judge. Black women are taking over those things right before there ain't gonna be no humans needed. And everyone of all races gets fired. Slate Money Podcast is talking about Ray Dalio this week. Dalio is a famous hedge fund manager who goes on TV and opines on whatever. And so he's the head of Bridgewater, which is a hedge fund, maybe the biggest hedge fund in the world. And it just has one of those names. So Blackstone is the biggest private equity. BlackRock is the biggest index fund. And then Bridgewater, you know, it has that kind of, you take two words of fundamental things, kind of like fire, air, earth, water, and maybe add in a color. So let's see if we can make one. Brown water, black air. I think those are the person of color versions. Those don't work. Blue fire. That sounds pretty good. Green sky, green air. I think blue sky is the Twitter alternative. Anyways, so I've heard of Ray Dalio, but I don't, you know anything about him. So let's talk about him. That way, if he ever comes up, we know something. So he's famous for going on TV and talking. He's famous for a self-help business book. And he's famous for predicting the 2008 housing crisis. And I guess he's famous for mentoring rich rappers and how to invest their money. And most of it is just a put on. So for predicting the crisis, he's been doing stuff since the 70s, and he always predicts doom and gloom. And then occasionally doom and gloom happens, and he's like, I predicted it. And he was a billionaire before he became famous and did his self-help book. But the thing that he leaves out is that he married into the Vanderbilt family, which is a famous American family of rich people. I think Vanderbilt was shipping. Like J.P. Morgan, I think, was banking. Andrew Carnegie was steel. And Vanderbilt was transportation, which back then was shipping. And at some point, all the richest guys got together, and I think they did the railroad together. And I think there's four famous rich people. I can't remember the fourth. But what he realized by marrying into the Vanderbilt fortune was that when you get that rich, when you're rich that way, when you inherit it all, you're not trying to invest your money and make giant returns. You just want to stay incredibly rich and be safe. And so that was his hedge fund. It just constantly predicted that the whole economy is going to shit next year, and so we got to keep your money safe. And he just always did that and didn't make giant returns, but made people happy because he did keep the money safe. And I think all these big funds, index fund, hedge fund, you wanted to start your fund in like the mid to late 70s or early 80s. So it's too late for most people. You had to be in the right place at the right time. If you want to start a giant tech company, I think you wanted to start that in the late 90s. Or what, Facebook, about 2000. But kind of like that crypto king, SBF from FTX, blah, blah, who got convicted the other week. Ray Dalio also wrapped up his thing in talk about making the world a better place. So that's another thing. BlackRock is famous for that. That's their ESG, which is where you'd be racist against white people. Anyways, you're going to come in for criticism when you're working in the 9 and 10 figures of dollars. So you also want to roll all that up into how you're making the world a better place. And the geese overhead agree. Oh, and spoiler alert, he's not really trying to make the world a better place. He doesn't follow any of the rules he puts out in his book about being good and blah. BlackRock isn't actually a bunch of good people. They just want to make money. They cloak it in diversity so that they can fire the people that they want and control the companies more. It's the huge. The upcoming Supreme Court case on whether or not the federal government can rig elections by telling social media who to censor has added some more information. Stanford University created something. I don't know if it was election integrity or what it was called, but the Department of Homeland Security would tell Stanford the people that it thinks it should be censored on social media, and then Stanford would go and tell Twitter, Facebook, etc. to censor them. And the government is allowed to have speech under the Constitution, but it cannot use coercion to force companies to censor speech. And it can't use coercion through a third party. You know, just going through Stanford to get to social media, it's either allowed or it's not allowed based on whether or not it's coercion still. Coercive. And so the FBI was talking directly to social media, I think CIA, a bunch of them, Department of Homeland Security, a bunch of them were talking directly, and that's going before the Supreme Court, and then now this indirect version has been added, I think, to that case. I double-checked, and the Stanford DHS thing, it's not a court case, it's a report from a House of Representatives committee. So the information will probably be rolled into the Supreme Court case, but it's not a case getting rolled into a case. There are three types of pain. I'm going to say the names here and then never say them again. Nociceptive, neuropathic, nociplastic. And those three things are injury pain, nerve pain, and Not Caused by Nothing Mystery Pain. And pain goes around as an electrical symbol, signal, nerves. I think nerves are kind of like the computer chips and the wires. And electrons and electricity somehow move around through the nerves. I think the longest cell in like the human body is a nerve cell, and they can be maybe up to something crazy, like 6 feet long. I guess with just like one nucleus. I think that's true. And then pain is something created by evolution. It's useful, it's to keep you safe. You touch a hot stove, it hurts. You pull your hand back before you burn your hand to a nub. But at some point, pain just goes on so long, you know, chronic pain, it's no longer useful. And in fact, the pain itself becomes the problem. I guess 1/3 of humans have chronic pain. And I think that's including kids and people in their 20s who never, you know, pretty much never have chronic pain. So, you know, adults, it's probably going to be half of adults. And, you know, as you go into your 60s to 80s, it's going to be way more than half of you have chronic pain. I bet a bunch of my listeners have chronic pain. And I guess chronic pain for not understood reasons is the number one reason for disability in the world today, which I think is like, you know, destroys your life, you can't work. I think that's definition of disabled. And this is coming from an October 18th Economist Babbage podcast about pain. And they're using a woman to illustrate the unknown type of pain. When she was 14, she was going to be a classical musician, and her arm started hurting and it swelled up. So they're like, oh, it's a repetitive strain injury. Just take it easy for a while. And then it didn't go away. And they're like, oh, well, let's try some surgeries. That didn't make it any better. She talks about how her surgeon got mad at her. You know, as each surgery happened and it didn't do nothing, he got more and more mad at her. I guess that'd be an orthopedic surgeon. And then she eventually got sent to a rheumatoid doctor, which is arthritis, but just pain in general. And they're like, you got pain that ain't gonna go away. Whatever you need to do in your life to accept that and move on, do that. Basically, give up on being a classical musician. That ain't happening. And she was basically like, that was the best doctor. That's the only doctor that did anything. You know, she went to doctor after doctor after doctor, all of whom wanted to help this, you know, beautiful teenager who's going to be a great musician and would, you know, be nothing greater in the world than to help her get over her pain and go back to classical music. But what that amounted to was a bunch of people who didn't know what they were talking about blowing smoke up her ass. And it took her a few years to find acceptance and become at peace with it. And also, if she went to any other doctors who were like, oh, I'm going to help you this time, for her to know that it doesn't, you know, don't let her emotions be controlled by what doctors say. I mean, she doesn't put it this way, but basically, she knows more than the doctor. Oh, and she did have a number of surgeries where they messed up her nerves. They went and fiddled with the nerves, messed up her nerves. So to go with the pain that is not understood, there's some nerve pain that is understood, but also can't be fixed. So except for the surgery, that's kind of the same thing that happened in my life. So about 20 years ago, I was in graduate school studying artificial intelligence. I mean, computer science would be the degree. And using a keyboard became painful. And then people call it tendonitis. Itis means inflammation. There's all sorts of problems with the human body where it's inflamed as a symptom, but not the cause. But 100 years ago or something, they said the inflammation is the cause. They named it itis. And so anytime you go to a doctor, they're just like, we need to reduce the inflammation, which does nothing. It's just for some people, the body fixes itself. For other people, it never goes away. And I got it something special. I mean, now it's my feet, my knees, my hips, my shoulders, my hands. Anything that's like a tendon in my body in those spots is degenerating. And I don't know if that would be classified as the unknown type of pain. It's unknown. The problem is it's unknown how to fix it, but the pain comes from the problem, which is kind of known. Oh, and my butt. Lately, my butt is really, it sucks. Who even knew that you had like tendons in your butt and that you're sitting on them all the time? But you are. I won't go into it too much, but it's tendons. It's also fascia, which is like a tendon. It's anything made out of collagen. Like, if you ever cut open a ham, sometimes you'll see just some glistening white things in there. It's that stuff. It's kind of like a banana. You know how like a banana gets brown spots because it's going bad? Well, that's what's happening inside my body. So there's no surgery. You could cut out the brown spot on a banana, right? Does that fix your banana? No. And there ain't no pill to fix it either. And I guess it's the same story for this lady, for me, probably for everyone. When you got a weird medical problem, but you go to doctors and it takes a while before you figure out what's going on because they will tell you with total certainty that it's blah blah when it ain't. And they'll send you to physical therapists who have no idea that physical therapy has absolutely no effect on degenerative conditions, which is probably half of the stuff that goes in there. I mean, it'd be like, just give up, physical therapist, quit your job because you're not helping anyone. Anyways, they don't want to know that. Their brain protects them from understanding that everything they do is useless for like half the people. And when I first had problems, the doctors thought they knew when they didn't, physical therapists thought they knew when they didn't. And then eventually, so I'm going online, looking stuff up, and I was still in college, so I had free printer paper to use. And so I started printing out studies and survey studies and journals explaining that basically there was no cure for my problems. And then I would take it into the doctor and prove to them that there was no cure. And that was kind of like all you could do. You like eventually get a doctor to go, oh, well, everything I knew isn't right. According to the latest research, you're screwed. I'd be like, all right, at least I got a doctor to read this thing and tell me I'm not crazy when I'm reading it. The doctors don't have time for you to teach them about stuff and et cetera. So I stopped doing that. I mean, to this day, I don't bother with talking about the pain stuff anymore because there's no point, but I still know more than the doctors. It's not hard to know much more than a doctor. I mean, I hope that these doctors know more in general about medicine than me. But when I have a problem, I look it up on the internet before I go in. And then, five minutes of Googling will usually make you more of an expert on your specific problem, if it's a weird one, than the doctor. So that's my recommendation. If you got some problem that ain't going away and the doctors keep trying to treat it, go look it up on the internet. There probably just is no solution according to current medical science. And this lady mentions that there was a period of a while where she was depressed and feeling anxiety and whatnot as she learned to live with her new life facts. And I went through that stuff too. Like 20 years ago, you could have asked me, like, what are you doing with your life? And I'd be like, I'm getting a graduate degree in computer science, specializing in artificial intelligence. I'm studying for the LSAT to become a lawyer. I am going to be rich as shit. I'm going to have the most valuable house in the most expensive city with the hottest wife, or possibly ex-wife, with kids that are getting ready to go to Harvard. It's going to be amazing. Like, you could ask me that. You could ask me what's going on, and I would have said that to you. And then when I learned I wasn't going to be doing nothing with the keyboard, and a lot of other stuff was starting to go wrong. Anyways, I was not in a good state of mind, and that went on for a year probably. I think there's different kinds of depression because I didn't feel depressed, but I had intrusive thoughts where I was like, I wish I was dead. And I would think that many times each day. And I'd be like, man, I wish my brain would stop saying those words, but it wouldn't. And then it stopped, and I just don't think about it. And they've done studies like when something terrible happens to you, or something wonderful happens to you, after a while it wears off and you just go back to your whatever your genetic happiness level is. Like, your family is killed in a car accident. After a while, you'll go back to however happy you were before that. You win the lottery. Doesn't mean you're going to be happy forever. Now that you're rich, you'll go back to the genetic happiness level. And so that happened to me. I've been pretty happy for, I don't know, most of the 20 years. I became an electrician until that destroyed my knees. The tendons, not the normal thing that would happen with like old people knees and you can have surgery. There's no surgery. Anyway, like I say, there's no surgery for a rotten banana. But here's the thing. Lately, I'm having some hope for a medical fix. And it's artificial intelligence and pain. Now, we don't know yet, but there's a decent chance that artificial intelligence is going to supercharge medical research, and they're going to start coming up with cures that were never possible before. And then whatever is wrong with my body, I mean, there's no name for it. Anyways, it's obscure. They're not gonna fix that. You know, artificial intelligence requires electricity, millions and billions, literally, of dollars of electricity. So no one's gonna buy $1 billion of electricity to fix some obscure thing. But you know what? The number one thing that would solve problems for everyone across the planet is if you just solve the pain problem. Like, okay, your body's messed up. That's never gonna change, but we can make it stop hurting. And there's no money to be made in surgeries because you can't patent a surgery. But there's tons of money to be made in pharmaceutical drugs because you can patent those things and charge a lot of money. And so that means there's an incentive for the pharmaceutical companies to use AI to create some sort of pill that finally solves the pain problem. And so that's where they would get the reason to spend the billions of dollars on electricity. Well, let's talk about doctors a little more. When I was being an electrician and having knee problems, I went to an orthopedic surgeon. And turns out I have patellofemoral pain syndrome. It's basically, you know, what if the collagen in your knees is going to crap? Well, you call it patellofemoral pain syndrome. And it's interesting because there's a whole bunch of different pain syndrome things. And what they do is they say the location on the body and they add the words pain syndrome. And that means they have no idea what it is or what causes it or how to fix it, but they know where it is and where it hurts. So it's where my patella and my femur meet and it hurts and they got no clue about it. So if any of your medical problems have pain syndrome on the end, that's what's going on. The location, it hurts, and there's nothing known about how to fix it by medical science. And that orthopedic surgeon was the best and only doctor I ever had who's like, yep, you got patellofemoral pain syndrome. There's absolutely nothing that can be done. I mean, normally a surgeon is like, you know, if all you got is a hammer, then everything's a nail. Well, they always want to do surgery. He's like, nope, there's nothing that can be done. I was like, thanks, doc. I don't want to have my time wasted going doctor to physical therapist to physical therapist. I mean, I've done that before. It doesn't work. And he's like, yeah, there's nothing can be done. I can write you a referral for a physical therapist. I'm like, nah, none of that. A good doctor, Asian guy, young. And then also, back pain. This is unrelated from a car accident. I went to a chiropractor. I was unaware that chiropractic is complete bunk. I bet some of my listeners think that it's real. Sorry. Anyways, I'm sure you'll continue to think it's real, but it ain't. Look it up. But I kept going to this chiropractor, and obviously what he was doing, there was no way it could possibly help me. You know, if I was lucky, it would have gone away on its own, and then I guess he would have gotten credit. But in my case, it didn't go away on its own, and so he just kept getting more and more mad as he's like, oh, is that better? I'm like, no, it's exactly the same. I'm not big into the placebo effect. I think some people, just talking to a medical person makes things feel better, and it really does. It really affects your brain. That's the placebo effect. And so, anyways, other people, it doesn't work on them, and I'm one of those people. All right, back to the science of pain. So we used to think that pain is biological. You touch a hot stove, the nerves in your fingers tell the nerves that go up to your brain, and then it hits your brain and it hurts. But now we think it's a biopsychosocial phenomenon. I mean, this is sounding a little bit like horseshit, but it definitely isn't just bio. Like, you probably heard of phantom limb syndrome, where someone has a limb amputated, I don't know, by a doctor or by an accident. And then they'll be like, my hand hurts. And it's like, you don't even have an arm. And they're like, it's my ring finger. I can feel it. And they do something weird. What are they? They like, if you're missing your right arm, they'll put you in front of a mirror so that you see your left arm as your right arm. And then sometimes that'll make the pain go away when you can, like, when your brain sees that it's still there, and I don't know. And so biopsychosocial. So that would be the psycho part. And then maybe the social part is the placebo effect, where talking to a doctor makes it feel better. The podcast doesn't said that. I'm just making stuff up now. Well, gonna get a little blue here. But one thing I noticed that makes pain go away is sex. I mean, it's not hard to think of the evolutionary biology with that. It's like, you know, if you're in too much pain, you might stop having sex, and then you wouldn't pass on your DNA, and then your DNA would die out. And then all the humans who are like, oh, you know, I got over my pain, I can keep going, then you pass on your DNA. And eventually it's like, I don't even feel pain when I'm doing that thing. Look for that sometime. See if that's how it is with you too. And I think it wasn't too long ago. In fact, I think it happens today and will happen tomorrow. But people will go into their doctor and say it hurts, and it's like, it's not easily explainable. And the doctor will be like, you're a liar. I mean, I don't know what kind of lying that patients do to doctors. They probably do a lot of it, because that is definitely a reaction I've seen from doctors, which is annoying when you're telling the truth. But anyways, now we have MRIs and computers now, and so you can see that these, whatever, the things that the doctors think ain't real, they're real. They're in your brain, they're real. So I'm just listening to this podcast and talking about it as we go, and they're like, biopsychosocial, your environment plays a fat part. And I'm like, oh, they're talking about black people. Well, they said something about violence. We'll see if they get explicit later on. They probably will. But, you know, if you're a doctor looking into this stuff, you got to know that if you live in the ghetto, then that pain is more real than you think it is. And maybe it is. And then they also say, because it's biopsychosocial, there'll never be one pill to fix it. They didn't know anything about pain before. I'm not going to believe they know it now. But I guess this podcast isn't going to tell me that AI is coming to save me. Well, I got to the upshot of the episode, and the answer is, there's nothing. Only thing that works is opioids. You can't have any of those. I think The Economist does an episode on pain like once a year. Same thing they said last year. Last year they were saying there's two ways to stop pain. Like pain, you know, put your hand on a hot stove. The pain goes from your fingers to your brain. Now you can try and stop it at your fingers, or you can try and stop it at your brain. And like ibuprofen and aspirin, I think they stop it at your fingers, and then opioid stops it at your brain. And as you know, the ibuprofen and aspirin don't work that good. And opioids for chronic pain means you're going to be taking them forever, and you will be addicted, and you may die. I think it was about 20 years ago where they said, there's a crisis in America of too much pain. And so doctors started prescribing tons and tons of opioids. And now there's an opioid crisis. And someone was saying that America pulled out of Afghanistan, and the amount of whatever poppy farming has decreased. And they're like, oh, look, you know, that's how incompetent America is. When you leave, the amount of drugs they make goes down. But actually, it's fentanyl is taking over from heroin. You make it in a factory now, and it's a lot cheaper. I looked up the street price of fentanyl. It's $3 to $20 a pill, and it takes 4 to 20 pills per person per day. So on the low end, it might be, you know, if you live in a big city and you can get it cheap, probably be $3 a pill, 4 pills a day. Like in San Francisco, they pay you more than $12 a day to be homeless. And as you build up a tolerance and the amount they pay you doesn't cover it, you become a criminal. Well, that's all. Links in the description, and thanks for listening.